Wednesday nights this quarter, we are talking about this topic of, Lord, make me an encourager. And I asked 2 weeks ago when we began, for those who did not need this class to raise their hands, and nobody did. So I'm guessing that we all need this, and I think for sure we do. We all can do a little bit better, and some of us could do a lot better at being an encourager. And when we talk about this, we're specifically talking about an encouragement to each other in the body of Christ, but no doubt it stretches beyond that. But when the Bible in the New Testament tells us to encourage one another, that's specifically talking about our responsibility to our brothers and sisters in Christ. So 2 weeks ago, we talked about the fact that God is the God of encouragement. And all encouragement ultimately resides and comes from Him and hopefully comes through us to others. But tonight I want us to look at what Bill Ingram helped us to initiate last week, and that is, what about Jesus? Was Jesus much of an encourager? When do you think about Jesus being an encourager? What people did Jesus encourage? Say again, Freddie. His disciples. That opens it right up. Everybody he came in contact with. Say again. Jesus was quite the encourager. To put it into categories, did Jesus limit his encouragement by race? Did he hone in on a particular race and say, you know what, I'm going to encourage these people more than I encourage anybody else? Question. Do we do that? Do we focus or limit our efforts and encouragement toward or away from a certain race? Jesus didn't. We don't need to do that. Did Jesus limit, I thought that was already up there, did Jesus limit his encouragement by economic status? You know, if you are on a mission, and if you have a 3.5-year ministry that you are engaging in, if you want it to be successful, wouldn't it help to have some money, you know, to do some advertising, to print up some flyers, to rent some facilities? Did Jesus focus his encouragement on those who could help him, who could donate to his cause? Was he focused only on those who were rich? Or did Jesus offer his encouragement widespread, regardless of economic status? Did Jesus limit his encouragement to people's spiritual condition? Did he focus on people who were particularly weak? Those are the people I'm going to encourage. Or did he focus on those who were strong in their faith because he didn't want to be around those people who weren't so strong in their faith? Jesus encouraged everybody he came in contact with. That's what Bill said. Doesn't matter their spiritual condition. If they were strong in the faith, he encouraged them. If they were weak in the faith, he encouraged them. If they didn't have any faith, he was an encouragement. Did he limit his encouragement by gender? Did he focus on the guys? Did he focus on the girls? It wasn't by gender. Did he focus? Did Jesus do any encouragement of children? Jesus was, as we're saying, the master encourager. Did he limit his encouragement by friendship? I want you to think about who you spend time encouraging. Is it limited by race, economic status, spiritual condition, by gender? Do we limit our encouragement that we offer to others by our friendships? It's easy to encourage friends, isn't it? Those are the people that it's easy to encourage. Those are the people we want to encourage. But Jesus encouraged his friends. He encouraged his disciples. He encouraged those people that would be considered his enemies. He encouraged those people that to us, they were complete strangers to Jesus. Did Jesus ever meet a complete stranger to him? Don't think so. But when that woman came and touched Jesus' garment, and Jesus stopped and turned around and said, "Who touched me?" In essence, she was a complete stranger, at least to his disciples, and in our mind, she would have been to Jesus. Did Jesus limit his encouragement to those he knew, to those he knew best, to those who were closest to him? I want you to think about Jesus' efforts, and if Jesus is the master encourager, can we learn anything from him about who we encourage, about how we encourage? I want you to think about some of these people that Jesus encouraged. Jesus, the Bible says, encouraged sinners. Tell me a sinner who Jesus encouraged. Don't say every sinner that Jesus came in contact with, he encouraged them. We got that one, all right? Let's get a little more specific. Tell me an account where Jesus encouraged somebody who was known as a sinner. What'd you say? Oh, the lady that was caught in adultery in John chapter 8. Did Jesus pick up the first stone and throw it at her? Bill? At what point did Judas what now? Say that again. What? Okay. What went through Judas's mind when Jesus washed his feet? Is that encouraging? That Jesus stooped down to wash his feet when he knew very well what he was getting ready to do. What about Zacchaeus? Was Jesus an encouragement to Zacchaeus? What was Zacchaeus besides a wee little man? What else was he? Tax collector. Was he? So he's like the most popular guy in town, right? Just like the IRS next week. Most popular people in town, right? Technically the 18th, correct, because the 15th is on it. Thank you. Technically the 18th. And I won't ask why they give that much leeway. Yes, sir. Say that again. Paul? What happened in Acts chapter 9? Did Jesus take time? Did he thump Paul on the back of the head in Acts chapter 9? Is that what you would have done? Hey, buddy, wake up. Some of what Jesus did on that occasion, we could call encouragement. What about those who were grieving? Did Jesus encourage anyone who was grieving? Who do you think of? Mary and Martha in John chapter 11. Did he encourage them? The passage that's up here from Luke chapter 7 is the widow of Nain, whose son had died. Did Jesus encourage her? You know, when we think about offering encouragement, perhaps it's to those who are grieving that we think about. What about those who are outcasts? You think of any outcasts that Jesus dealt with? The 10 lepers. Yeah. Were they outcasts? Oh, yeah. In fact, it says that they were at a distance. Why were they at a distance? No, they're unclean. They're not allowed. They're not permitted to come into where the people are. They're outcasts. Tax collectors, are they outcasts? What about some of the other groups that Jesus came in contact with? If the Samaritan woman, were they outcasts? Considered dogs by the Jews? So did Jesus avoid them? Did he minimize his contact with them? Did he minimize his interaction and his efforts to encourage them? I would venture to say that there are some people in the church, not some people in the community. I'd venture to say there's some people in the church that you might avoid. And when you think about encouraging one another, they're not on the top of your list?
How about the thief on the cross?
What about the thief on the cross? What could he have said to that thief who had a penitent heart? Could he have said, "Too late, bub. You've already made your choice." What did Jesus do? He forgave the man. What kind of an impact do you think that had on those who were there? Quite an impact. Did Jesus encourage anybody who was fearful? Peace be still. In Matthew chapter 8, when he's asleep in the boat and the disciples are fearful, they wake him up. Peace be still. In Matthew chapter 14, Jesus comes to them walking on the water. Were they afraid? Yeah. Be of good cheer, he says. It's I. Don't be afraid. Do you know anybody who's fearful, scared about what's happening in their life, concerned about circumstances? You know anybody that needs your encouragement? Jesus encouraged people who were fearful. He encouraged people who were down and out, who were weary. You know Matthew chapter 11. Jesus says, "Come unto me, all ye who are weary," old King James, "all you who labor and are heavy laden." What does he say he'll do? He's going to give them rest. Now, how does that work? How does it work in verse 28? In Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, Jesus says, "Come to me, all ye who are weary and heavy laden, and I'm going to give you rest." Then what does he say in verse 29? Verse 28, "Come here and I'm going to give you rest." Then what does he say in verse 29? Y'all are looking at me like the Bible's going to appear magically up here. "Take my yoke upon you." Well, that's not, Jesus, that's not very encouraging. You know, I'm kind of weary. I'm heavy laden. And you've invited me to come over there. You're going to give me rest. And when I come over for rest, you're going to put a yoke on me. Why did Jesus use that terminology? Why did he say, "Take my yoke upon you and" what? "Learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest." Second time he said it. "You shall find rest unto your souls." But that doesn't, how does that work? How can you find rest and have a yoke at the same time, Judy? Say it again. A yoke suggests a team. We think of a yoke. What do you think of? You think about this big, heavy lumber that is fastened around that mule's neck. But whatever that animal is, if he's a cow, if he's a donkey, if he's an ox, whatever that mule is, those yokes usually didn't come with one hole. It was usually with two holes. When Jesus talked, or when the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy, and then Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, when the Bible talks about do not be unequally yoked together. Deuteronomy says, "Do not plow with an ox and a donkey together." Well, the ox and the donkey would have been in a yoke. When Jesus says, "Here, come and let me give you rest. Now, here's my yoke. You ready? Brace yourself. I'm going to put my yoke on you." Wait a minute. You're not by yourself when you're bearing that yoke. As Judy said, there's a team. And if I'm on one side of that yoke doing the Lord's work, am I by myself? Who's on the other side? Right beside me is the Lord. When I give myself to the Lord, when I come unto the Lord, as he says in Matthew 11, and I commit myself to the Lord, I become yoked together with him. Am I by myself? Am I supposed to go about all of these commands that he gives me? Am I doing these all by myself? All the while, he's right there beside me. John?
Somebody.
That's right. The truth is, you're going to be yoked to somebody. The encourager or the discourager, John says. Whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. Jesus said in John chapter 8, verse 34. So you're in a yoke. You get to decide who's on the other side. And the one who's on the other side, whether it's the encourager or the discourager, how much influence do they have over you? How much influence can they have over you? Why were you not supposed to plow with an ox and a donkey together? It's unequal. You're going to plow in circles. If I get yoked together with Jesus, is that an equal yoke? It's not so much equal, is it? What's wrong with having an ox and a donkey together? Well, the donkey is weaker and smaller, and he's going to drag that ox down. But the ox is bigger and stronger, and he's going to drag that donkey all over the field. Is Jesus bigger and stronger than we are? Is he who is in us greater than he who is in the world? And if I commit myself to be yoked with him, the Lord is my helper, Hebrews 13. The Lord is my helper. And when I'm there with him, I might be weary and I might get tired. But Jesus is my encourager. Do you know anybody who's weary and tired? Worn out as a Christian? Worn out because of the world? Worn out because of Satan's attacks? Do you know anybody who needs encouragement? Throughout this quarter, we're going to come back and talk about some of these categories of people, but I want you to see them in the life of Jesus. Did Jesus encourage anybody who was troubled? Did Dan mention it tonight? John chapter 14? Let not your heart be troubled. He says it at least twice in that chapter. Jesus found those people who were troubled. And how did he encourage them in John 14, by the way? They were troubled. He said, don't be troubled. Do what? Instead of being troubled, you believe in God? Believe also in me? In my Father's house are many mansions. Is that encouraging? Is that encouraging when you are troubled in heart to think about what God has prepared for us? Jesus encouraged those who were sick. Jesus encouraged personal workers. What did Jesus say in the Great Commission? Go therefore, verse 19 of Matthew 28, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. It's kind of a big task, Jesus, to all the nations. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them into the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you. And then what does he say? Guys, you're not by yourself. Remember that yoke? Lo, I am with you. How often? Always. When we head out to do the Lord's work, Jesus is there and has promised us in what we might think is one of the most difficult tasks in taking the gospel to the world. Jesus says that he is there with his disciples all of the way, and he encouraged those who were obedient by telling them about the blessings that they had promised to them. Let's talk about some ways in which Jesus encouraged. What methods do you think of? We talked about people that he encouraged. What methods did he employ? What did he do to encourage them?
He fed them.
Healed people. Would that encourage you if Jesus healed you? I think you might be encouraged. Job said he fed people. If you were hungry and Jesus gave you food, would that encourage you? Somebody says, well, it depends on what it is. Would that encourage you? You think about, as you think about the life of Jesus, how did he encourage? Jesus encouraged by his very presence. Remember what he said to the disciples when he's walking to them on the water? Be not afraid, it's I. I'm here. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the definition of the Greek word from which we get the word encourage. It comes from that Greek word, parakaleo, compound word. Kaleo, call, para, parallel, alongside. The word literally means to be called alongside of. What was one of the greatest ways that Jesus encouraged other people? Just by being there. Just by calling them alongside. Can you imagine being in the presence of Jesus? Would he have to say anything to you to encourage you? Would he have to listen to you to encourage you? You just sit there with him. And just by being there and just by him being with you, there's encouragement that comes from that. I want you to think about that in relationship to us. We got to make application of this all throughout this. Can you offer encouragement to anybody else just by being there? Now, for some of us, we think we're more encouragement if we're not there. If I go over, I'm just going to be in the way. So I just won't go over, and it'll be better for me not to be there than it will for me to be there. Or if I go over there, I just don't know what to say, and I'm going to feel awkward when I get there, and I just don't know the words to say, and so maybe I won't go because I don't know what to say. What about just being there so that somebody's not alone? Dirk, you had your hand up. Absolutely. And well, if you lived in that day and had heard about Jesus, were there people, how widespread was this message going? Were people hearing about Jesus, running to him, taking their sick to him, just so that they might touch his garment and be healed? The message of Jesus was being spread. Jesus encouraged by his friendship. You can offer your friendship to somebody and encourage them by what you can do as a friend. He encouraged by his humility. Bill mentioned washing Judas's feet. Jesus washed 24 feet that night. Would that have encouraged you? What would have encouraged you? How and what would it have encouraged you to do? If you're there and Jesus washes your feet, anything you experience? Any motivation you have? What's happening? I wonder, Joe says, if anybody washed his feet. The Bible doesn't tell us. Nobody had at that point. Nobody had taken on the role of the host that night. You go to somebody's home and they're the host. Their responsibility as the host was to see that the feet were washed. They're not in any one of their homes. They are in an upper room. But that's washing somebody's feet. That's not for me. If Jesus bent down and washed your feet, what would you think the next time you walked into a room for some kind of gathering and you saw a basin of water and a towel sitting over to the side? Would you have any thought at all about, I need to go over there and I need to do that? Or would you be sitting back and waiting? I wish somebody would get over there and grab that like Jesus did. We should have Jesus here. Jesus would go over there and get that and nobody else. I wish Jesus was here to wash my feet. You think you'd have that thought? No. But Jesus, encouraged by his humility. How encouraging is humility today? Think about it the other way. How encouraging is pride today? Does somebody's pride and arrogance, does that encourage you? Does that just motivate you? Just build you up? Make you feel so good? I don't remember the last time somebody's pride and arrogance just encouraged me and made me feel good. What about somebody's humility? You ever had somebody do something for you that evidenced a humble and contrite heart? And you looked at that and you thought, I just don't deserve that. I don't deserve somebody to do that for me. You think the disciples thought that? Jesus washing my feet? I don't deserve Jesus to wash my feet. But encouragement, when somebody is encouraged, there's usually an impetus, a motivation to go and do something about it. And when somebody shows humility towards us, hopefully that helps us to show humility towards somebody else. Jesus encouraged by the confidence that he helped to instill in others. He encouraged by his sympathy. What happened when Lazarus died and Jesus came to Bethany? What does John chapter 11 say that Jesus, what were his emotions in John chapter 11? John 11:35 says Jesus wept. Twice in the chapter it says that he groaned in his spirit, that he was troubled. When Lazarus died, did Jesus have to go to Bethany? Was he under any obligation to go to Bethany? When Lazarus died, was Jesus under any obligation to go and see Mary and Martha? I mean, was that his job? I mean, he's the preacher, right? Somebody's died, so it's the preacher's job to go over there and be with the family. And so as long as, he's 4 days late, but he's here, okay, the preacher's, and we'll let the preacher handle it. Was Jesus under obligation to be there?
Jesus loved that family.
Jesus loved that family, Ray said. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Jerry says Jesus could have raised Lazarus and not even had to go there. When Jesus got the message that he was sick, he could have made him better. He could have raised him from the... He didn't have to go there. Richard? That was Jairus' daughter. It's another account where he was on his way to Jairus' house and he would raise Jairus' daughter when he got there. And on the as he was on the way there, the woman touched his garment and was healed. But why did he go?
Why did he wait 4 days?
Why did he wait 4 days? You think about Jesus showing up. When Mary and Martha heard that Jesus was in town, what effect did it have on them? Look in John chapter 11. I know we just studied the book of John last quarter, and so we've all got it memorized. But let's look in John chapter 11 and look at the response. Jesus comes to Bethany. And verse 17 of John chapter 11, he came to Bethany. He found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. Many of the Jews, verse 19, had joined with Mary and Martha as in efforts to comfort them. Look at verse 20. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, Martha received word that Jesus was in town, and as soon as she heard it, she went out to meet him. But Mary was sitting in the house. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Was it an encouragement to Martha for Jesus to come? Just his very presence. He hadn't said anything at this point. No words had been spoken. No emotions had been shared that he's just there. And as soon as she hears that he's there, she goes out to him. Go down to verse 28. When she had said these things, she went her way and secretly called Mary her sister, saying, "The teacher has come and is calling for you." Verse 29. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him. She hadn't heard it the first time, but Mary's response is the same as Martha's response. What was it about Jesus that was encouraging, just being there? It's his presence. It's his friendship. It's his humility. Why did Jesus come? Wasn't he a busy guy? Hadn't Jesus said on one occasion Let the dead bury their dead. Jesus, if Lazarus is dead, and he's already dead, and he's already in the tomb, what? Jesus, you're a busy guy. You know, you've got a lot of other things to be doing. Why are you going to Bethany? Do we have busy lives? Do we have full schedules? I just really don't have time. Somebody else is going to have to do it. Jesus saw an opportunity to encourage some very close friends of his. Do you think it had any impact on people other than Mary and Martha that Jesus had come? The disciples. You think it had any impact on those Jews who were there with Mary and Martha? You know, we focus on Jesus' relationship with the brother Lazarus and the two sisters Mary and Martha, but how wider spread was the impact? You know, sometimes when we encourage one or two people, we don't know the end result of that happening. Jesus encouraged just by speaking, just by his voice. He said in John 10 that the sheep know the shepherd's voice. We looked a few weeks ago at how Mary Magdalene at the empty tomb saw Jesus and just thought that he was the gardener. But when he said her name, she knew who he was. Jesus, just by speaking, was offering encouragement. He offered encouragement by forgiving people. And we think, well, of course, Jesus did that because he was God, and God had power on earth to forgive sins. Can you encourage somebody by forgiving them of something they have done against you? Is that a form of encouragement? Is it a form of discouragement if you don't forgive them? Is it a form of discouragement if you forgive them in your head, but you don't let them know that you've really forgiven them because, you know, that would just be going a little too far? Is it a form of encouragement to forgive somebody else? Jesus forgave just by the reassurance that he gave to those people. We've only got a couple minutes. I want you to see some of the words that Jesus used and think about, sometimes we don't know what words to use. I think I've got one more. Sometimes we don't know what words to use, and these are not words that we can use on every occasion. But I want you to think about, you know, there are occasions where I just don't know what to say. Think about some of the things that Jesus said. Can some of these things be offered as encouragement? When Jesus told those people, "You are of more value than," he said, "many sparrows." But is it encouraging to remind somebody how valuable they are in the sight of God? When they're discouraged, when they're weary, when they're troubled, you go back to that list of people that Jesus encouraged. Is it encouraging to say to somebody who's hurting, "Don't forget how much God loves you"? Because in the midst of trials, in the midst of hardships, sometimes our initial reaction is, "Why, God? Why me? Why are you letting this happen to me?" We start turning on God. And sometimes it's helpful to have a brother or sister say, "You know, I know you're having a hard time. Just remember how valuable you are to God." We may not know what to say. We may not think we have the perfect words, but Jesus told him in that same context, not one of them is forgotten before God. Don't think that God has forgotten about you. That's the words of Jesus that you can use to encourage somebody else. We've talked about John 14. Words about heaven are great encouragement. Jesus told them, "Be of good cheer. Don't be afraid. Only believe." But remember when he said, "Your Father knows what you need even before you ask"? If you're trying to think of something to put in a card to somebody as a form of encouragement, what about just quoting from some words of Jesus? "I know that you're having a hard time. I know that that things are not going as well as you would like. I know that you're hurting. Whatever the situation is, remember what Jesus said. Remember that Jesus said, God knows what you need. I might not know it. The church might not know it. But just remember that Jesus said God knows it. Richard? Yeah. So have you ever tried to pick up a yoke? Is that easy to pick? One person? I mean, as strong as I am, all right, and as much as I can. Why are you all laughing? As much as I can lift. How heavy is a yoke? Jesus said, "My yoke is easy. My burden is light." Why? Because he is bearing the weight of it. You ever carried something with your child and wanted to make them feel like they were really helping? You know what I'm talking about? Here, you get that end and I'll get this end. You've got the middle, all right? You've got 99.7% of the weight, but you want to make them feel like they're a part of it. How much of the weight is Jesus bearing? My yoke is easy, my burden is light. Think about these words that Jesus said to people. It's your Father's pleasure to give you these things. Jesus told God, "I'm praying for them." When was the last time you told somebody you're praying for them? Is that a form of encouragement? Jesus is the master encourager. There's a lot that we can learn from him. Next week, we're going to get into the book of Acts and start looking at some encouragers who are in the church and what we can learn from them. Thanks for your good participation tonight.